What a wonderful group. Now, we've been here for the feast now. This is about the fifth time at this location, and we just had a little group here in the middle, sometimes a few people out there, but never have we had so many people in this room. It's just absolutely wonderful to see everybody here together. And for Johnny and me, who've been here since day one for the feast, we both are just kind of so excited about just seeing the volume of people here. Well, what I wanted to talk about today was a little bit about some of the story that's in line with the talks that we had on, with the stories that we had on the night that we had people from Zimbabwe, Estonia, and Latvia and other places tell about some of the native spirit of areas that are different from the United States. Now, some of this, and this is a very abbreviated story about my life and being involved with this area, and I've actually given this as a sermon that's on our UCG website, and that's the longer version for those who would like to see it. Maybe I'll send you the link to it, and some of you have actually heard it. But when I came, my recollections of life when I was growing up was we noticed that we had no relatives. We had our mother and father at home, but we had no grandmother, no grandfather, no uncles, no aunts, no anything. We were just solitary family and connected through our Ukrainian Orthodox community, through the church. And my mother would talk about where she and Dad came from, and that was Germany in World War II. And sometimes they would try to tell us little kids, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, about grandmother and grandfather and about the war. And I didn't want to hear it. When I was little, I did not want to hear my mother talk about her family because it was all tears. It was bitterness of World War II. It was stories of hardship. And she'd always start crying. And I hated to see my mother cry. And we would just try to escape and go play ball. And I never really wanted to know my history and my roots. Of course, as growing up a teenager, I picked up on a lot of the story from bits and pieces that came through. But then my father died very suddenly, age 42, of a heart attack when I was a freshman at Ambassador College. And then my mother died after a very short illness of leukemia, 2 weeks is all she had, that she knew that she had it, of acute leukemia, and the story was gone. And all of a sudden, I wanted to know what my roots were. I wanted to know about relatives back in Ukraine. I knew my father was from Western Ukraine and my mother was from Eastern Ukraine. Well, I knew they had very good friends, and of course, we knew them in Canada. They lived in Edmonton, Alberta, and there's a couple that my parents had known very well. They had lived together in Germany, and both those couples went through many similar experiences. So in the year 2003, Bev and I went to visit those people because I wanted to get the whole story. I wanted to talk to them and videotape them and get the whole story about my parents coming. Now, my parents both were in the church. They both died in the faith. And one thing they did tell me was one of the things that was interesting to them about the church was all the prophecies about the tribulation and about all the different things that are yet to happen and all the horrors and the Holocaust and genocide and everything else. But they said, you kids, we've been through that. We've seen it. We've experienced it. And, it never had that much impact on us in our family. But their story begins when the Germans invaded the USSR in 1941. It was called Operation Barbarossa, where the Germans, with thousands of tanks and 2 million soldiers, blitzkrieged their way into Ukraine, Belarus, and Russia, and very quickly made very, very substantial gains. My mother lived in a town just south of Kharkov, the second largest city in Ukraine. It's a town about 50 miles south. The Germans came, and one day they bombed the city. 700 people were killed, and my mother was leading a herd of cows from the field back towards the barn. And she remembered seeing the bombs fall, and she crawled into the cows for security. And she was so frightened and traumatized that to the day of her death, her hands still shook from that initial experience. But that was only the first time that she'd be bombed. She was going to be bombed many more times after that. A year later, the Germans took workers from Ukraine to work in Germany as forced labor. And what they did was they'd come into a city, they'd go to the courthouse, they'd find out who the people in the city were, and every family was notified to have one child on the train station in 2-3 days to go back and work in Germany. My mother was the one selected from her family. She was 16 years old, and she, along with thousands of others of youth in Ukraine, were sent to work in the factories. Because in Germany, the men were all at war, and the women were working in factories, but they still needed more people to work in the factories. And so my mother and her friend from the same town went to work in Germany. They were told that it would be 6 months and they'd be home. And as young kids, you know, they were excited. This was kind of a trip, you know, kind of an exciting trip for them to go work in Germany, and after 6 months they'd be home. It wouldn't be 27 years before she'd come back to see her mother. My father was taken in a similar way from Western Ukraine, and they didn't know each other at that time. My mother worked in a shoe factory along with her friend Dusya, who still is living and lives in Edmonton, Alberta. And my father worked in a factory that made jams and preserves. Once they got to Germany, they found out that they were treated as third-class citizens immediately. This was not a concentration camp. This was a work camp. But they had to wear a big yellow patch on their on their clothing that said Ost, O-S-T, which means East. And they were the Ostarbeiters, who were the East workers. They were not allowed to walk, you know, on sidewalks. They had to walk, you know, in the streets. And they were fed very, very meagerly. But my mother and father both worked there from 1942 to the end of the war in 1945. The Germans had a caste system for how they treated outsiders. The people who were treated with the highest respect were British and American soldiers who were captured. They were treated with the highest respect. Russians were treated with disdain. They were taken prisoner, but they were treated very, very badly. My father remembered when black soldiers would be coming down in parachutes, and if they were black, they were shot immediately. The Germans had no room or thought at all for the blacks. And, of course, we know what they felt about the Jews. It was just a very, very tough environment. The situation between the Russians and the Germans was probably one of the most savage in all of history as far as the war was concerned. The Russians lost 15 million men to casualties. 15 million men died, and 15 million civilians died. Half of all housing in the USSR was destroyed. And that has led to a trauma that has continued almost to this day between those two powers of distrust. There's just a lot I could say, but I just wanted to give you some of the tip of the iceberg of this story, because I feel like it explains some of the way that I think and the way that my life is now, or my interest in this area. My father, just a year before the war ended, was taken away from the work camp and put into a concentration camp, which he never really understood why. Now, at this time, my mother and my father had met, and they were actually dating. In fact, this foursome double dated, and they had a lot of enjoyable times together, even being in the work camp. But my father was put into a special concentration camp, and those men were used to, after bombings, to go in and pick up any unexploded ordnance, any exploded bombs, that type of thing. They used the East workers for that purpose. Well, as the war was winding to an end, my father was able to escape. He was in the work detail and just walked away from it and spent his time on a farm. Finally, the Americans came in, and they were so excited about the fact that the war was over. The city that my parents lived in was Magdeburg, which is halfway between Hanover and Berlin. They lived in this, that's where, you know, their work camp was. And as the American soldiers came in, my father was on his farm. A very interesting event happened that I think just tells about how God really works in people's lives and brings people together. My father was one that just kind of worked, and at that time the farmers didn't even care. They knew that my father was a escapee, but the war was about coming to an end, and everybody just wanted the whole thing just to, you know, come to an end. Well, the farm was guarded by American military personnel. Years later, my father, when he came into the church and was in Spokesman's Club, he met a person that was just very, very interesting to him, because he was an American sniper in Magdeburg during the end of the war. And my father was a painter. He liked to draw a lot of paintings. He took a lot of sketches that he made at the time of the war, bombed out buildings and rubble and life during the war. And then these sketches, he made them into bigger paintings. He used them as the model for bigger paintings. Well, he had this gentleman over, his family over for dinner, the Frank Mühlbauer family. And my father and him were talking about, my father was on his farm, and Frank Mühlbauer says, you know, I was a sniper, and I was guarding one particular farm. And then they started talking, that building looks familiar. They talked about exactly where they were, found out that Frank Mühlbauer had my dad in his gun sights for 3 days. He was watching him the entire time for 3 days. And now they were both members of the same Spokesman's Club and both members of the same church. It was really an amazing story. I had that story checked out several times because it sounds almost too good to be true. Before the war ended, though, the bombing on Magdeburg was incessant. My parents were literally just survivors among many, many other people who perished. They remember many of their friends who perished. But towards the end of the war, the Americans and British carpet bombed as the cities like Dresden. Magdeburg was a big oil facility, oil dump, and it was also carpet bombed. 1 square mile every night, 1 square mile burned out, you know, every night. But the British would bomb all night long, and the Americans would bomb all day long. And my parents would go to the, you know, the sirens go off just incessantly through the day. Of course, there was a caste system for that, too. You know, the Germans would be the first ones to go in, and then people of this caste would go in next, and then whoever didn't get into the bomb shelter just had to stay outside. But the bomb shelters were built in zigzag fashion so that if there was a direct hit, which there were many direct hits, only the people in that little segment would be killed. My mother would remember friends of hers, you know, 18, 19-year-old kids. You know, just every night somebody would be killed from direct hits. But at least it wouldn't kill a lot of people. And that's what the psychology of this was. The Americans rolled into Magdeburg. And that was so exciting. That was just tremendously exciting to have the American soldiers come in. Of course, Americans have a whole different spirit about them. The first thing that they saw was cigarettes, chocolate, and hams. I mean, that's what everybody talked about. You know, Americans just brought all these wonderful things in. And everybody thought the war was over, we're liberated, freedom at last. And then after a couple of days, parents woke up, and all of a sudden they don't hear Americans anymore. They hear Russians. Now, what's this with all the Russians? Well, the Potsdam Conference, it was decided in the Potsdam Conference by Truman and Stalin and the other, Churchill, that the Allies divided Germany in a particular way, that no matter what gains they made towards the end of the war, it would be decided that the boundaries would stay with what was pre-decided. So while the Americans had swept past Magdeburg all the way to Berlin, that they would come all the way back to where the boundary was between East Germany and West Germany. So now all of a sudden my parents are under Russian occupation. And the Russians were very, very harsh. They treated these young people as traitors. They were incessantly interrogated. They were beaten. They were absolutely treated like absolute traitors. And they were made to walk all the way back almost to the Soviet Union. I mean, it was a very terrible thing that had happened. They wanted to draft my father to back into the Russian army because the Russians had just declared war on Japan, right towards the cessation of World War II. And so my parents then had to decide, what are we going to do now? Most of the young people just complied and were parts of big long lines that were all headed back towards Ukraine in these detention camps. Well, my dad and his friend, Volodya, who's still living in Canada, said, we're not going to, we're going to try to do something about this. So my father snuck out of the camp and went all the way to the border and talked to one of the border guards, one of the Russian border guards, and said, I've got four of us here who would like to cross the border. What will it take to do that? I mean, he had no idea. The Russian guard could have shot him, could have turned him in, could have done any number of things. He says, okay. He says, if you give me a bottle of vodka, a suit, and a watch, I'll let you cross the border. And so my parents then slipped out of the detention camp and made it all the way to the border. And right at midnight, this guard let him across. The reason for three different bribes was that he had to bribe the two guards on either side of him to let them across the border. And they rustled their way across the border, and all of a sudden it was noticed that they were scurrying, and the Russians started shooting. My parents ran and ran and ran. They weren't married yet. This is just two couples. They're 20, 19 years old. These are kids. They ran and ran for about 2-3 miles until they discovered that they were safe. And they were in the British zone. And then they made it to Hanover, Germany, and found their way to United Nations refugee camp, Camp Lisenko, as it was called. And they remembered the big news of that day. The day they arrived in camp, the big news all around was is that America had dropped some kind of an atomic bomb on a Japanese city. That was the day that America dropped a bomb on Hiroshima. My parents then were put into that camp. They were given a bombed-out house. And my dad was told, if you can fix it up, you can live here. And so he and Volodya fixed this house up. My parents were married. And that's where I was born, in 1947. That's where my roots are, in that camp. Volodya had an uncle in Canada, and he had asked a Canadian soldier if he could put an advertisement into a Canadian newspaper, into a Alberta newspaper, just saying, your nephew, Volodya, is in Germany in a camp. Uncle, if you're there, send me an invitation to come to Canada. Would you believe that his uncle saw that ad in the paper? And Volodya was able to come over pretty quickly in 1946 to Ukraine. It wasn't that easy for my parents. They didn't know anybody. You needed a sponsor. And so my parents tried Argentina, Brazil, Australia, Canada. The idea was that Volodya would maybe sponsor my parents over, but no luck. Finally, through old family acquaintances back in Ukraine through a University of Minnesota professor, it's a long story, my parents were able to get a sponsorship to come to the United States. My dad had his first job picking apples in southern Minnesota. So they brought me over, and my little brother, Ole, was born. My mother was pregnant with him on the troop ship that brought our family over from Ukraine. So I thought I'd just tell you a little bit about that, because to me, it was quite a story, but only after about the year 2003, when I put it all together. And I just told you bits and pieces. I mean, I didn't tell you whole large sections of what had happened. My parents, when we were growing up, did not allow us to speak English at home. In fact, my dad was just very, very adamant that we learn Ukrainian. He says, you'll always be out in the streets and you'll learn English. You will learn English fast. But when I went to kindergarten, I did not speak English. And I knew how to write Ukrainian. I knew the Cyrillic alphabet. My teachers were frightened. They saw all these, you know, symbols on paper, and they called my mother. And I remember a special conference with a troubled kindergartner, which was, please teach Victor English. And I remember this big event that I was to learn English. Well, I guess I eventually did learn English. But in Ukraine, at home, English was forbidden. And not because we didn't like it. There were two philosophies among immigrants. One was, keep our national heritage, learn the language, because you will always learn the other language. You'll be immersed in it, and you will know it. It's good to know two languages. The other philosophy was, forget your language. We don't want to hear your language at home. You are American citizens. You are citizens of the United States. And I'm just very glad that my parents went to the effort of keeping us in the knowledge of Ukrainian, which was then an easier bridge to Russian, since the languages are similar, and Polish. When I'm in Poland, I can get my around, pretty well. But it's really helped be able to keep with those languages. So I thought I'd tell you a little bit about my story, because I feel like it's along the lines of some of what trauma that has led people with the uprooting of lives to be where they are. And one thing that I found interesting, that when I went back to Ukraine, I go back to Ukraine about once or twice a year, that I have gone back to visit some of my mother's friends in her village. And what I found interesting is that these are her friends who came back from Germany, and to see the kind of life that they've lived, to see what they look like. And it's just so interesting, and I'm so thankful to God that we found our way to the United States, and we're able to live there, but that God has been able to use some of the knowledge and the past to be able to do his work in this area. And one thing I do want to ask you to pray for is the continuation of the work of God here in the Baltic states, in Eastern Europe particularly. We have big white fields that are ready for harvest. We have people requesting the Good News magazine. We have people interested in the Holy Days. We have people interested in the truth of what follows after life. People who are withdrawing from traditional Christianity. But in these areas, it's even more interesting because they didn't even have traditional Christianity. Most of this area lived under an atheistic state for 70 years under communism. And people who had really no relevancy to God anyway. And yet, the gospel is to go into all the world. I just feel God has raised up people like Johnny Lambert. He uses people with skills that, some of us have to be able to do the work in being those who are preaching, witnessing, talking to, and explaining the truth of God. Today, in our video, and I'll have Johnny have more to say about it, we'll hear more stories about people and about some of what they have gone through, plus and minus, or pro and con, or good and bad, in our journey towards eternal life.